the title is Dwelling in Happiness. I'd like to start with this passage from chapter 15 of the Dhammapada on happiness. Let us live happily among those who hate, free of hatred. Among those who are miserable, free of misery. Among the greedy, free of greed. Let us live happily then, like bright gods, feeding on happiness. So the subject tonight is that state of mind that this verse describes, and our ability to live happily in a world that can at times be so very disagreeable to us. We often think of liberation or enlightenment or nibbana as an instant conquest of all unhappiness. That's not what the Buddha pointed to in his teachings about the ability to find a deep peace and joy now as we go about our lives. There are many practices in Buddhism that help us live happily on this earth, despite our various misfortunes. Concentration comes to mind first for me, because I have experienced exquisite bliss during concentration practice. After enough time focusing exclusively on a wholesome object, the hindrances fall away. The mind contains no desire, aversion, restlessness, lethargy, or doubt. Just the object of concentration and the joy of freedom. Concentration can also lead to a sense of complete union with all existence. We directly experience the truth that all phenomena are interconnected. Our delusion of being a separate, self-sufficient entity drops away. This is often called a Satori experience, and it's pretty darn delightful too. It has left me with a broad grin for days and an almost irresistible urge to tell others about it. Now, more accessible in our lives than concentration is metta practice. We can do that for a short period during any day, or just we take a short break. But it's not as transportive as concentration can be. It's more enduring, though, because it grows in us as we practice it. The more we practice metta, the more accessible it is to us at any moment. There's a Zen story about the Brahma Viharas that has helped me understand how they work and why they're often called the divine abodes. That's pretty close to a direct translation from the Pali. That's abodes. Like your house is your abode. The story also tells about how the Brahmaviharas work together and how it got this name. There are four of them. They're delightful, and we can live in them. The Buddha was walking along when a group of civic leaders and businessmen approached him. They said something along the lines of, "Lord, we honor your teachings, and we long to find the freedom that you teach about. But we can't leave our work and our families and become monks. Isn't there some other way we can find this happiness?" And the Buddha says, "Yes, there is. There are four heavenly states that you can live in." Now, most people imagine that it would be heavenly to lounge on the beach on vacation. But it isn't as delightful as the divine abodes. And like the bliss that comes from concentration, it doesn't last as long. These divine abodes, metta, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, are so interconnected with each other that they're basically aspects of the same thing. A durable state of happiness. Buddha often said that the practices he taught led to a pleasant abiding here and now. At their core, the divine abodes are all about caring for all beings. That caring is metta. That's the sort of central core of the Brahmaviharas. And when that caring encounters suffering, it expresses itself as compassion. When it encounters happiness, it is expressed as sympathetic joy. These three Brahmaviharas have to be balanced by equanimity and by each other. So the memory that I still have today from a film that I saw yesterday of a newborn rhinoceros running and jumping around with delight as he encounters the world for the first time. The Brahmaviharas, you see, have to be balanced with each other so that I don't stay too goofy too long about baby rhinos, because it can happen. The best thing about focusing on the happiness of others is that it breaks our tendency to be motivated by our desires and aversion. In other words, clinging in its two opposite forms. Serving the self and its impulses is not the way to happiness. Instead, it leads us directly to dukkha, or suffering. The self, as a thing unto itself, is merely a delusion. Escaping the seductive tug of this delusion is the way to happiness. And the more we escape it, the closer we come to a lasting state of peace and joy. It totally beats lying in the hot sun on hot sand without a beverage, which is often the reality of our dreams of heavenly happiness. Caring about others' pain and joy with equanimity lets us see beyond this delusion and recognize the truth of non-duality. We are so interdependent with this planet and all its inhabitants that there's no separation between us and them. We're quite literally all in this together. A surprise benefit of climate change may be that it could show humanity how deeply we do depend on the interconnection of all earthly things. When we grasp this truth of anatta, that no thing, including us, exists separate from all other phenomena, then we are liberated. We have access to the joy of the divine abodes. Equanimity, I keep mentioning that. Let me explain that it frees us from clinging not just to our idea of self, but to anything in the world. We can see clearly whatever is going on and be at peace with it. I personally rejected the idea of enlightenment as a big bang decades ago, although it may happen all at once to some people. For me, freedom from mind states that have caused me misery has happened in stages. It came from my learning the teachings, which you do by reading and listening to Dharma talks, and contemplating those teachings. I also practiced ethics in various meditation techniques, and every so often this led to sudden breakthroughs in my understanding. None of this was terribly difficult. I've just plodded along and occasionally had these lovely epiphanies. Then it was like rinse and repeat. We just keep going. Like Jack Kornfield says, after the ecstasy, the laundry. An old Zen teacher of mine loved to say, nothing special. Another vitally important aspect is ethics, or sila. It is instrumental in letting us live 24/7 the reality of our unity with all beings. The five precepts for lay people are not killing, stealing, lying, or abusing sexual energy or intoxicants. Now, these precepts are not about being a good person or having people like me or going to heaven. They're about kindness. The core intention is protecting others. If we live by these precepts, we protect ourselves and others from fear that we'll act harmfully and from the consequences of our doing any of those things. If I'm violent towards someone, they'll have all sorts of self-referencing emotions. Dukkha. If I follow the precepts, then they can drop their guard. They can be at peace. If I use wise speech, people will come to see my intentions, although people will still misunderstand. That happens so often. But if I do my best, then I feel more relaxed, and the heat of the human world comes down a little bit. Keeping the precepts in mind helps us keep the divine abodes in mind. As we abide in this awareness, we feel a deep and peaceful love. This is a state of such peace and happiness that there is no English word for it. Wouldn't you know it? Now, I don't know what heaven is or might be if it isn't this feeling. The first practice that Eastern Buddhists learn and work with is generosity. I've really seen how this leads to happiness for me when I have made major donations, like political contributions to causes I really care about. This past week, I felt like the sweep of the Georgia Senate races was a gift that I had given America. When Carla and I got those $600 checks from the COVID-19 payments that we didn't really need, and so many other Americans did who were not going to get them, we spent a day researching organizations that help people who really did need that money. And we gave away the money that shouldn't have been sent to us. By evening, both Carla and I felt like we had reached out and touched people that we cared about. And we were both in a really good mood. Now, just a few minutes ago, I vouched for the bliss that's possible with concentration. And now I want to attest to the efficacy. I just love that word. Efficacy of our practice as a whole. It can be seen in the way we go about our lives and the attitude with which we relate to other beings. Sometimes a few of those other beings can make me really mad, but I try to get out of that state of mind as quickly as possible. Because, the more I dwell on it, the more unhappy I'm going to be. Wednesday, January 6th, 2021, showed us where living with an attitude of us versus them has gotten our country. After watching the insurrection on TV for a while, I quickly switched over from CNN to Fox News and found that Fox was reporting the facts as they were known. And CNN was saying how awful those facts were, taking up the time instead of reporting. They were expressing the opinion that they know we have all shared for at least 4 years. Fox reported several Republicans calling for reconciliation. Now, I want to add a little realism here and note that they had just lost the Senate. That was probably the best tactic. for them. But the question we face now is, can we end our national hatred of each other in time to avoid another insurrection or something even worse? Some of my friends are still complaining about how awful Trump is when we've known this for years and years. We don't need any more anger about the fact that we've had a president with no moral fiber. This just further ingrains the habit of hating and makes it hard to assess the truth of how things really are. And at a time like this, a clear vision of the truth is really badly needed. Since 2015, I've been hoping that the Republican Party would pull itself apart to get American government out of its political deadlock. Now seems like the best chance we've had for that to happen, since Reagan said government wasn't the solution, it was the problem. How can we run a country with that attitude toward the people who govern? This paradoxical attitude stopped democracy from working this past Wednesday. Fortunately, it was only for 4 hours, but they were four pretty dreadful hours. America's polarization came from clinging to a point of view. The Buddha warned against this over and over in his teachings. Without the ability to accept the fact that things are the way they are, we can't hope to change them effectively or fairly. If we're not concerned about the well-being of everyone, if we don't seek justice, but only revenge, there will be no peace. Maybe right now you're feeling a tightening in your chest, or a clenched jaw, or some other response that we've been suffering for the past 4 years, like outrage that there's been a madman in the White House with control over U.S. nuclear arms, that he's embarrassed our country around the world again and again, that we have to see and hear him almost daily. And now it sounds like I'm implying that somehow we need to accept him and those who have supported him. We do need to accept this truth, because it is the truth. But we certainly don't need to approve of Trump or how he's behaved. We shouldn't. His conduct has been reprehensible since long before he ran for president. The distinction between acceptance and approval is important because of the effect that these states of mind have on us. We need to see the truth that Trump has committed serious felonies after years of serving this country poorly. He should be stopped so he can't cause further harm. But we don't need to hate him for this to happen. Hatred can't overcome hatred. It can only be overcome by love. As the Buddha said in the Dhammapada, this is an ancient and immutable truth. Acceptance, as opposed to approval, relaxes our bodies and clears our mind so we can assess our options to actually change things for the better. Better for all beings, or as many as possible. There is almost nothing I could do about Trump and his supporters for the last 4 years. All I could do was send money to those running against them. Doing it gave me and my wife, Carla, a really good feeling. Friends who could go door-to-door in Florida and Georgia said it gave them a similar feeling. We were doing what we could out of love for our country and this planet, and it made us happy. I agree with politicians who say Trump should be censured and kept from running for office anytime in the future. I don't know if it's politically possible to do that in the next 10 days, but I bet Nancy Pelosi will figure out a way. I can see things this way without hatred, thanks to my practice and the teachings of loving kindness. And here's again what the Dhammapada says about happiness. Let us live happily among those who hate, free of hatred, among those who are miserable, free of misery, among the greedy, free of greed. Let us live happily then, like bright gods feeding on happiness.